You're listening to Shooting Hoops with your hosts, Dia Miller and Adam Drexler.
Welcome to Shooting Hoops, a podcast about basketball and the Portland Trailblazers. I'm your host, Dia Miller, here with my co-host, Adam Drexler. This is episode 4. You can now find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on YouTube. Having video has been pretty cool. This is, you know, I'm new to YouTube. I haven't really done a lot with this, although my kids think it's cool. But it's given us an opportunity to kind of add some things in. Adam's been doing some really cool video editing. So if you're listening on podcasts, we will do our best to paint a picture of what's happening here. But if you're watching on YouTube, you are definitely getting some little extras. So bonus points for that. But our goal is to get these up as fast as possible. We know there's a lot happening. YouTube is probably going to go up slightly faster as well. So check that out. Adam, we had a special episode last time. If you guys missed it, Adam's dad, Clyde Drexler, joined us and gave us some interesting conversation about the team currently, as well as, you know, some interesting stuff from the past. So that means that, and then we missed a week. We had some technical issues and we missed a week. So it's been 2 weeks since we've sat and just talked about what's going on. How are you, Adam? What's going on with you?
I'm good. You know, just living life, enjoying it, and getting ready for the holidays that are coming up. So
yeah,
it's been good.
Thanksgiving is this week. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, time is flying by. We're on episode 4. Look at us.
The Blazers are 17 games into their season.
I don't
know how this happened. It just feels like it's flying. So
yeah, definitely.
And do you have big Thanksgiving plans?
Not really. Just gonna have a cool, relaxing dinner with my brother and sister. And
Do you do like traditional Thanksgiving food? Are you a Thanksgiving
person? Honestly, I'm not really like a big food person. So I'm like, whatever's there is good.
But yeah.
My sister is a huge food person. She's very, very refined palate. So I'm sure she's going to throw down and just make something amazing. So I'm prepared for that.
You know, I've never been a big fan of Thanksgiving food. Like I don't do like the traditional Thanksgiving food. So I can, but in my world, it goes straight from Halloween to Christmas. We just kind of, you know, Thanksgiving is just kind of a quick thing. So
yeah, but here Thanksgiving is like it's like a YouTube ad for like the full Christmas festivities.
Seriously. All right. Well, we are currently recording this on Monday night. The Blazers just lost to the Milwaukee Bucks, which is a shame. We fall to 8th in the West. Before this game, we were 3rd in the West, which gives you an idea of how close these teams are right now. But currently, I was going to throw this up here so we could see it. Here we go. These are our last few games. So, not including the Bucks game that was, I think the score was 111 to 119. And then this shows you can see these last few trips or these last few games that we had here, a win over the Pelicans, a loss to the Mavs, a win over the Spurs, a loss to the Nets, and a loss to the Jazz, and then a loss to the Bucks. So, few tough losses.
I mean, these are not bad teams to lose to, by the way.
No.
I mean, the Bucks and the Jazz, they're upsetting a lot of teams. And they're a well-structured basketball team. They don't have a defined star. So they keep teams on their toes, just like the Blazers.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are teams that are – as long as those games are close, like the Bucks, it was 119 to 111.
And
that's good against, you know, a team that's supposed to win the championship.
Right.
I mean, I'll take that.
Yeah. Yeah. Before at the beginning of the season, we talked about this team as having a really difficult start to their schedule. You know, it was supposed to be just really a tough schedule start, and we've done well. I mean, way better than I think anybody really anticipated. And like you said, these are not bad losses. And I think even more so than the win-loss record, I always think about this, like, we just have to get into the playoffs. Once we get into the playoffs, it starts over. It doesn't matter what your record was. Once you're in the playoffs, you just have to win your games. So it's encouraging to me that we're seeing good play. We're seeing teamwork. We're seeing the good things happen in the games. I think that's huge. And I think sometimes that's even bigger than the win-loss record, assuming that your record is good enough that you make it to the playoffs. Yeah.
And if I'm a Blazers fan sitting at home just thinking, worried about my team, at the beginning of the season, everyone was worried, you know, we're not going to make the playoffs. We're not going to be competitive. And I think we've seen that we got off to an early start. We didn't come out sluggish. We came out swinging, and we beat a lot of teams that people thought we weren't going to beat. And The Blazers have built themselves a pretty comfortable cushion to weather the storm, because now we're getting into that mid-season stretch where people are shaking off the rust. A lot of players who kind of have had rocky starts this season, a lot of teams that have had rocky starts, are starting to catch their wind and start to play like we anticipated them to play, which is to be expected. Every season you see people kind of shake off that rust. So teams like the Brooklyn Nets, now they've got guys like Ben Simmons, who's kind of shaking off the rust and starting to look like his former self. And they're starting to string together some good games. Even the Lakers are starting to get into their stride and win some games without LeBron James. Anthony Davis is starting to look like he did in the bubble again. And the Blazers, they've got some good wins under their belt. And now it's just about weathering the storm and staying in that middle of the pack. Because if we can weather that storm and stay kind of in that 1-8 range, we're playoff bound.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that the Blazers fixed Ben Simmons, because that was the game that seemed to set him back on his path. So you're welcome, Nets. But it's you're right. We're not in a bad place, and I think after the start that we had, it would be really easy to kind of get down. I noticed that today. I started to feel a little like, oh man, like we were doing so good. But I think it's really important to remember that. And I think, too, that even though those teams are kind of shaking off some of that rest, there's still problems there. It's not perfect. And I think that, you know, I think that we're a competitive team this season. And I think that we're a team that can compete with these teams even as they've shaken off the rest. I think we still will give them a run for their money.
Definitely.
So.
I think right now, the fact that, you know, teams are starting to hit their stride, people forget this is a competitive league this year. It's not just like one team is blatantly better than all the other teams. A lot of teams are very competitive. You've got the Clippers, who were competitive without Kawhi, and now they're getting Kawhi back. You've got the Warriors, who won the championship last season, people early in the season now we're starting to have doubts and trying to say, oh, something's wrong. And that, then Klay drops a 41-point game, and all of a sudden they're back on track and looking like they're going to repeat. So, I mean, it's a competitive league. The fact that the Blazers are competitive and are able to take these games from these teams is a big deal.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, too, it's important to remember where we were at this time last year. You know, like this is I don't think this season, I don't think really anybody expected this season for us to come out and just wipe the floor with everybody. Like, this is supposed to be a building season. This is supposed to be, you know, the moves are being made. We're in this transition. Last year was the first part of that, with, you know, essentially kind of tanking and dealing with the injuries that needed to be fixed. And putting together a team that could start to compete. And so, you know, we went through last season and then we started out this season with these changes to the roster and things like that that have been really promising. And I, for one, really, I mean, I at the beginning of the season, I was talking about the team as if this season was going to be kind of a wash. I mean, I obviously always think like, hey, maybe we'll win a championship. But realistically, I knew like we weren't where we needed to be. And so I think the fact that we're already doing as well as we are is huge and kind of unexpected. So I think that this is, you know, we only go up from here. I mean, I guess yeah. We could go down, but we're hoping.
On Jason, so we'll everyone just knock on wood for that.
Wood.
It can get worse, but we hope it doesn't. And I think the biggest takeaway from these last few games is just our consistency. If we can have our scorers, guys like Ant, guys like Jeremy Grant, you know, in Dame's absence, if we can have them be efficient with their scoring, then we can take these games from people without, I know Dame's going to be out for a while. We can steal games. It's just about being efficient with our scoring. So I think, there have been a few games where Ant is kind of, he's putting up great numbers, but sometimes the efficiency is kind of not there for winning games or taking games over. And he's, you know, he's had a lot of great games too. I just think without Dame to kind of take some of that offensive firepower, he's kind of having to take more shots and, you know, It's all okay. It all comes down to him and Grant making shots, essentially, to kind of put the Blazers in a position to win.
Yeah, it's so funny to be talking about the team as needing more like offensive firepower because we're so used to them being so strong there and so weak on defense. Whereas now, like we're playing good defense and seeing like a massive improvement on that side of things.
Definitely. I think whenever you have guys like Josh Hart, Jeremy Grant, Nurkic is too tall not to be a good defender. And, you know, people coming off the bench like Justice Winslow, Little, they're just big bodies that you can throw at some of these players. And, you know, whatever matchup we have people who fit the mold of someone who can defend against them. And that's valuable. So I kind of like what Coach Chauncey Billups is doing and kind of playing with the rotations a little. I know for the Milwaukee game, we saw Little get more minutes than Justice Winslow and kind of be the sixth man in that game. Yeah. And for stretches of it, I liked what I saw. And you kind of just wonder, you know, on any given night, I'm sure Chauncey's kind of trying to test the roster and see how he can put guys in a position to win.
Yeah. And I love that. I love that about him and this current team. I love, first of all, that we've created a team. I mean, we've talked about this even on this podcast before, that this team is so versatile in what you can do with the players. And I really like that Chauncey's mixing it up and trying different lineups and seeing what works. And I think that I personally think that that's a really big thing to be able to do it because teams play differently and their lineups are different and their size is different and the way they move the ball is different, whatever else. And so if you are in a situation where you can look at how this opponent plays and uses their size or lack thereof and how they move the ball and what they like, if you can pay attention to that and say, oh, okay, this is the lineup we want to use to take care of that. Versus just, well, these are the guys that we put in together at this time. That makes a difference. And I think that that's something we haven't seen a lot of in the past. Part of that is just, you know, the choice, obviously, of the coach. But part of that also is the ability and the versatility of the players that we have versus where we've been in the past, where some of those lineups just wouldn't work. You would get lineups on the floor and we'd all be going, what's happening here? Whereas I don't think that's really the case this season, even if it's an unexpected lineup, it's kind of like, oh, okay, this might work, you know? And so I think that's a good place to be.
Yeah, definitely. It looks more stable it looks like now, you know, whenever we put, you know, first, second unit in, it looks like, all right, it doesn't look out of place. It looks like right. we have people in the position to succeed. Whereas, right. you know, previous iterations of the roster kind of looked like, all right, we don't have the personnel for every team. We kind of have to adjust and try to just play our brand of basketball against yep. every team. But now we can kind of adapt. And I think that's kind of the reason why we've been so competitive against a lot of teams is that it keeps teams guessing when you, any given night, any of your players can just pop off. Right. With the Blazers specifically, I mean, that's kind of what the Utah Jazz are kind of doing. They're playing team ball, and on any given night, it could be Jordan Clarkson, it could be Laurie, it could be yeah. you know, whoever on that team, and they play together. And the Blazers do the same thing. You see Josh Hart when Dame is on the floor and when Dame has been playing with him. Josh Hart kind of fits this role player, you know, type of build, or like this kind of push tempo and play aggressive defense. And then when Dame is not there, he goes and he turns into scoring Josh Hart and, yeah, you know, yeah. puts up 17. And Jeremy Grant is going to do his thing. Obviously, he's a vet and he can score the ball. And he's efficient with it, too. So now it's just in Dame's absence, it's kind of up to Simons to take that, you know, the backcourt and Shaden to kind of step up and learn as fast as he can as a rookie yeah. trying to fill Dame's shoes while he's gone.
Yeah, big shoes to fill. Well, and I was thinking about that too. You know, the other, I don't remember which game it was, but it was coming down to the wire. And, you know, it used to be that teams could double, triple team Dame at the last minute and be pretty safe. Whereas now, if you are coming down to the wire with this team, it's dangerous because there are so many guys who can take that shot and you just don't know who it's going to be. Dame could pass it to anybody on the court and there's a solid chance that they're going to make that shot. And I tweeted something about that the other day, because that's a dangerous place to be for the other teams where they don't know what's going to happen or who's going to take it. And it could go so many different ways. I feel like, and you can maybe correct me on this, but I feel like with most teams, if it's coming down to, you know, a 2 or 3 point game and the clock is running down and the game's on the line, you can look at who's on the court and make a solid bet as to who that ball is going to, at least who they're going to try to get it to, and maybe a second choice. But it seems like a rarity to me to have a team where it literally could go to almost anybody and you just yeah. can't plan for that.
Definitely. And like, usually teams will have your go-to guy. So
right.
let me use my dad, for example. You know, we need a last second shot. You know, my dad, the coach would say, okay, we're going to draw out the play to get my father the ball. And, you know, that's most occasions. Every now and then, it's, you know, middle of the season and, you know, teams are kind of adjusting to that, or teams just are saying, okay, we're just going to throw the double team or throw the triple team at right. my father because he's going to get the ball. The coach might try to draw up a misdirection, use that player as a decoy, use my father as a decoy to get the ball to somebody else, like Porter or somebody. Right. But those are few and far in between. Whenever it comes down to games that you need to win, you always typically go to your star. And this is where I have to give props to Damian Lillard is one of those game winners. He drove. He saw the triple team. Now, a lot yeah. of stars, this is where ego comes into play. And yep. they'll try to force that shot, even with three defenders on them, because it's
yeah.
they're the, you know, it's written for them. It's their time. And especially with Dame time, I mean, that's not a bad, you know, it's not a bad idea. It's his whole nickname. But,
yeah.
you know, I saw him drive, draw three defenders, and kick to a corner for a Josh Hart three. And when you do that as the franchise player, that just shows that you're having yeah. a winning attitude about the game and you're trusting your teammates. And whenever yeah. you do that, your teammates elevate their level of play. So you see guys stepping up and hitting game winners. And it's funny, a friend of mine sent me a tweet that said that the Trailblazers were collecting game winners like they were Infinity Stones. And I mean, it's crazy to think that, you know, on any given night, if the game is getting close, anyone on the court at the time is capable of getting the ball and confidently making a shot. And I feel good about it. Yes. And it's working. Yeah.
It is. Well, and I think about that with the Anthony Simons game winner that we had early on in the season. Dame specifically talked about that. He talked about how he could have taken that shot, but he trusted Ant to take it. And so he passed it to him and Ant took the shot and we won. And I think that trust is a reoccurring theme around this team. They seem to really all trust each other and lean on each other. And I think that that's elevating them as a team and not just as individual players. They're playing team basketball, which again, like, it's so nice to see, because I think we've struggled with that. Even in times where they've tried, it hasn't translated on the court the way that it is right now. And so, you know, you hear them talk about that, and you're exactly right. What you said is exactly right. The fact that Dame trusts Ant to do that, then Ant starts to build, or anybody in this, I'm just using that as an example, starts to build that confidence that, like, oh, well, he trusts that I can do it enough that he's not taking the shot. He's giving it to me. Like, I can do this. And I think that that's one of the things that, you know, I always appreciate about Dame and his leadership is he is not a star that lets his ego get in the way. I'm not sure I can think of a time where he's done that. He's a very much a team player. There have been times where he has put that team on his back and driven them to the win, but not because I don't think that's because of his ego. I think that's been because the team has struggled. In a lot of situations, we're seeing him just really like trying to pass that off and being okay with that. And I think that that's huge.
Yeah. I think Dame, he's been around this league for a minute. He knows. And for me, my experience playing is that, especially overseas, that one of the biggest things is that sometimes the talent gap is vast overseas, to where you might be in a different kind of atmosphere or a different kind of skill set than your teammates. Mm-hmm. And when you're playing overseas, I think something that people don't understand is that usually the import players, the American players, cancel each other out. And it sometimes comes down to your teammates knocking down a shot or two that really gets you the win. And if you've been around overseas a while, you know that sometimes you have to kind of elevate your teammates. You have to trust in your teammates and you have to uplift them to give them the confidence, and that's going to help your team win games. And then the same thing applies with this Blazers team, is that everyone around the league, their expectations for the Blazers was down here. And Dame knows that in order to elevate and get wins in a tough Western Conference, he has to trust that his teammates have the confidence to make those shots. So passing off, you know, a game-winning situation to somebody is something that is going to build confidence, make or miss. The fact that he passed it to them and the fact that they know, like, okay, the ball can come to me at the end of the game is a big deal. Right. And I think a lot of what's so weird about it is, I think a lot of sports analysts would say that that is a weak move, or that's a flaw. You know, we saw it with, I think, LeBron James, you know, passing the ball, or letting Ray Allen take a game-winning shot, or, you know, drawing it up or passing it to somebody else to win the game. But I make no mistake, that's smart basketball. Of course, Dame is capable of making a game-winning shot or putting something up. And, you know, he's Dame. So the chances are high that it will probably go in. But
we have other players.
There's superstardom, and then there's winning basketball.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think having other players that he knows are capable as well, like, that's part of it too, is it's not like he's just passing it to somebody, you know, that is not a good player. Like, we've got a team that can do that and that will do it and that has done it. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah. And they're showing confidence. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. That's true. There is a lot. I feel like there's a lot more confidence than there's been in the recent history. And that plays a part. You know, I think, again, when you're confident in your ability and you're confident in yourself and you're confident in your teammates, that has an impact on your game. If you're going out there and you're unsure, it's like blood in the water for the Sharks, you know? And so this is a team that is acting like they belong here, and they do.
Yeah. I mean, you never want to be out there and feel like you're a non-factor at the end of the game. If you know that, okay, no matter what I do, I'm going to sit in this corner and I'm not getting the ball, it kind of makes you lax, and it kind of just, it makes it so much easier for the other team to stop you when they know they only have one guy that they need to worry about. So when everyone on the court is a threat, that's team basketball and that's winning basketball.
Yeah. So we've talked a little bit about Dame, but Damian Lillard is once again injured. So Chris Haynes originally tweeted, Portland Trailblazers star Damian Lillard underwent an MRI and it revealed a right calf strain in a different area from his previous injury that will sideline him for a brief period, league sources tell NBA. Okay, and then Casey Hodal, who's the beat writer for the team and travels with the team, retweeted that with this. He said, for what it's worth, Dame departed with the team today for a 4-game road trip. So I don't anticipate that Dame is going to play in those 4 games. I think probably he's going as support. You know, there's not a lot that they can do, I'm assuming, for his leg here. So I'm guessing that him being on that trip has a lot more to do with just the fact that, like, he's a leader and he's going with his team. But it does sound like it's not super serious. I believe that they are giving him a couple weeks and then they're going to reevaluate. So it's super frustrating after having him out all season last season to have then two essentially back-to-back injuries that are sidelining him. I'm grateful that it's not more serious, but I can't even imagine how frustrated Dame must be to be, like, after missing last season, then to be dealing with these injuries has to be so frustrating.
Yeah, I think that a lot of this is, just from my perspective, it might be a little bit precautionary. I think too many times with injuries, we get right back into the fray. And what we do without knowing is overcompensate. And it can kind of put a strain on other parts of the body. So I think the Blazers are smart about this. They understand that it's a long season and we're going to need Dame later if we want to make that push. So it's one of those things where, okay, we can kind of try to weather the storm now and then go off and have Dame available when we're ready to make another push. Because, I mean, playing against teams like Milwaukee, who, okay, that's an understandable loss, but then later on we have teams that we can probably beat. Then you want Dame for those games to make sure you win those games.
Right.
And I think Dame's going to be fine.
Yeah, I think so too. And I know, you know, I'm sure that there's going to be speculation about and people making a bigger deal out of it than it is. But yeah, I mean, you don't ever want to downplay an injury. You know, anytime there's an injury, you want to make sure that it gets taken care of. We don't want to lose Dame later, especially because, again, we just have to make it to the playoffs. Once we're in the playoffs, and that starts over. You know, the record starts over. It doesn't matter anymore. So if we lose a few games, it's not going to be the end of the world. And I think, you know, we want to make sure that he's healthy. I actually am kind of, it seems like it's maybe a good thing that it didn't re-injure the same part of his leg. At least we know it's not like an injury that's going to be maybe plaguing him regularly, you know, like if it had been the same part, then you think, okay, is this going to be a recurring thing? But it just happened. It's just, to me, it seems like it was kind of a fluky thing that he just did twice. So hopefully he's not out for too long. On the same injury front, we have news about Gary Payton Jr., who is, originally he was supposed to start the season and then they pushed it back and they've just kind of kept pushing it back. And once again, they've pushed it back again. So we are now, I believe it's 2 more weeks and they're going to reevaluate again. So he is on the mend and I think, you know, they're anticipating he's going to make his return here. But he is still out for a little bit longer. I'm glad they're taking it easy. I'm glad that they're not pushing him. I think that's important. It's wild to me to look at Golden State and see the difference that it's made to not have him on their team and think about what that means for our team when we do have him. We've been playing these games without Gary, and I cannot even imagine how much different it's going to look when he's on that court as well. So I'm really looking forward to Gary coming back, and I'm just like crossing my fingers that it's soon.
Yeah. And he's another one of those guys that is just going to make us better. I mean, I see no scenario where he makes us worse. I mean, he's a veteran. He's a tough defender. And he comes from winning basketball with Golden State. So, I mean, you don't win championships on accident.
And
he was a valuable part of that. So I think that's another guy that can kind of shoulder that load and make it easier for Dame to kind of make it through this season.
Yeah. Yeah. He's one that I have been dying to get on the court. I'm really excited about. I was a fan of Gary's before when he was playing in the G League. And I think that's always really exciting to watch players who come from, you know, from the G League, who fight their way up and keep pushing and keep working. I think he was in the G League for like 5 years and then he got called up to Golden State. And I just have so much respect for that, for the ability to keep pushing and to learn and grow and work yourself into a position like that. So I'm excited to see what he does with this team. I think he's going to be great. But in the meantime, it's been cool to see him on the sidelines. It's cool to see him kind of stepping in. You see him kind of interacting and like kind of coaching players on the side. So I think already he's made himself valuable to the team, even not setting on the court yet.
Yeah, I think anytime you have a guy that has been in the G League and worked his way into the NBA, which is no easy feat, mind you. There's so many people in the G League who are capable of playing on an NBA roster.
Oh,
it's all about time and place and the perfect situation. And he's put his head down and he's been grinding all this time.
Yeah.
So just having a guy like that on your team that has been in that underdog situation and made the best of it and made something of it and turned it into, you know, a great career is a big boost for your bench. It's morale. Who doesn't love that underdog story? And on top of that, his dad is pretty cool. Pretty cool guy.
Yeah. Yeah, you know his dad from now. Yeah. Did you know him before the Big Three or was that just from the Big Three?
I'd seen him around, but the Big Three gave me a chance to actually really get to know Gary Payton. He's just the funniest guy. Great guy.
That's really cool.
He'll still talk mess though, but definitely a funny guy.
So that's going to be exciting to have him there. We have to talk about Shaedon Sharpe. Okay. Mm-hmm. Shaedon Sharpe is just killing it right now. We've got these tweets I wanted to read. This one comes from Brett Usher. It's Shaedon Sharpe is now third in the NBA in 3-point percentage at 51.4%. That's the third highest such figure in NBA history for a rookie through their first 14 games, trailing only Brent Berry and Desmond Bain. So to make that a little more clear, especially if you're listening and not looking at the tweet, Shaedon Sharpe is the third best 3-point percentage in the entire NBA right now, 51.4%. And only two people in the history of the NBA have had a higher 3-point percentage at this point in their rookie year, which is huge. Like that's a really big deal. And then the follow-up to that is David McKay tweeted, Trailblazers rookie Shaedon Sharpe is officially averaging double figures, 10.1 points while shooting 51.4% from the three and 55.4% overall. That's insane percentages. Yeah. Like, yeah. That is so good.
Yeah, he's on fire. Typically, you know, people go through these shooting streaks where they just are on fire. They just don't miss. And he's doing that. But if you watch his game, it's not just a fluke. He's an efficient player. You know, he doesn't waste a lot of movement, and he's solid, which is pretty rare for a rookie, because usually, you know, you have to kind of slow yourself down and pace yourself and learn how to kind of, you know, pick your spots. But he seems to already have his spots down and know exactly where to be an efficient player. And that's what the Blazers need. I mean, you have so many players who can score the ball, but the name of the game is efficiency. And yeah. if you're shooting above 50%, then you're doing a great job. So like guys like Jerami Grant and Shaedon Sharpe who are shooting in that 50%, and not only that, from the three, that's insane. Right. So if he can keep that up, that's just the bonus. But I mean, as long as he's got the hot hand, why not keep feeding it?
Yeah. Yeah. And the confidence too. I mean, we talked about that a little bit earlier. Like, he has a lot of confidence. He goes out there and plays like someone who knows he belongs there. And it's just really cool to watch. I know that every season there are rookies who come out and play this way. I know that. I know that there are always guys that come in and they're ready to, you know, to play significant minutes. But it feels like it's been a while since we've had one of those. It feels like, you know, our rookies have been, and some of them have been great. But they've needed a little more work, partly because we haven't had as high of picks. So it's been a while since we've had somebody who's come out and been this good. And yeah. I think it's really fun to watch that happen.
Yeah, I think it's all about knowing kind of how, or giving people an opportunity to showcase yeah. their skills. Everyone in the NBA can play. There's a reason they're in the NBA. But
even the worst guy in the NBA.
Yeah, the worst guy in the NBA is light years better than you or me on any given day. They're just like your average basketball fan. If you think you can take an NBA player on, you are just wrong. Any pro player, you have no chance. But I think it all comes down to kind of coaching style. When you have somebody like Chauncey Billups, who's he's played in this league, he understands that there's a lot of talent on his roster, and it's just about unlocking it. And when you have a rookie like that who comes in with something to prove, he's on a new team. This is his first year in the NBA. He's trying to make it for himself, and Chauncey's giving him the opportunity to do that. He's hungry, and Chauncey's letting him go out there and eat, and he's making good on it. And we've had guys in the past, like CJ McCollum, when he first got to the Blazers, he was kind of put in a role where he was just kind of, he wasn't given that kind of ability to just go out there and kind of play his game. He had to kind of play a system. And mind you, there were people in the roster who were kind of ahead of him at the time, but he really came into his own. And Chauncey, having a guy who's played in the league, just kind of escalates that process and just kind of expedites the growth of a rookie, instead of having to sit there and watch somebody ahead of you for a number of years. He kind of has just been thrown onto the field, and he's got to learn as he goes. And luckily he has Chauncey out there to talk him through it.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, again, this is a good team for a player like that to develop, because you have guys like Dame who are also going to step into that role of teaching and helping. And I think, you know, he's coming onto a team of players that will invest time in him. I think that a lot of times I think about this, and I think, like, as a NBA player, if you come in and you start like teaching the people around you, like, now you're training your competition in a sense, because even if they're on your team, you're competing for for contracts. You're competing for roster spots. You're competing for money. You're competing for those things. There's only so many roster spots. There's only so many starting spots. There's only so much money teams have to pay. So essentially you want to be the best so that you can get those things. So if you're a Damian Lillard, for example, and you come in and you start teaching Anfernee Simons everything you know, pretty soon Anfernee Simons is coming up quickly behind you, and he also knows those things and can essentially slide in and replace you. So there's got to be a sense in which there are players who struggle with that and maybe don't do that. And maybe it's not even a fully conscious thing. But one of the things that I really appreciate about this team is that they don't seem to have a problem with that. They seem to really embrace the team, you know, and the fact that they're not individuals playing basketball, that they're a team, that they're going to teach each other and help each other and work together to be the best that they can as a team. Even if that means that you're teaching someone else your skills and elevating them to a spot where they can essentially take your spot. And I really appreciate that about this team that they do that. And I think, you know, I think Shaden will benefit from that as well, because I think there are a lot of players who will invest time and energy into him.
Yeah, I think, like, with that, I think it comes down to coaching. I mean, Chauncey's, sometimes you have coaches where you are kind of at a competition with your teammates because you are fighting for a spot, and that spot is permanent. You know, you are right. Put into your role. Some teams kind of put guys into a role at the beginning of the season, and no matter what you do, it's very tough to break out of that role. But I think Chauncey seems like a coach who's saying, all right, we're going to go with whoever has the hot hand. And we've seen it with the way that the Blazers play. They're saying, okay, tonight Josh is, seems to have the hot hand. We're going to go and feed him and make sure he gets those shots. And then the next night they got Grant, and they're like, he's got the hot hand. We're going to Grant. And then against the Bucks is Simons. And whenever you have a coach like that, it makes you want to be a better teammate, because you know that everyone has an opportunity. And, you know, as the old saying goes, like, if somebody's got the hot hand, you keep feeding it. And
yeah,
everyone's bought into that. So I attribute that to coaching for sure, but also just the culture. I mean, first, from my experience, when you have a star player who is elevating your team and is not just saying, it's me, they're saying, no, right, it's us. And we've seen it with the game winners. Dame is out there celebrating. He looks happy, regardless if he's the one that shot the shot or not.
Who made it?
Yeah. So whenever you have that kind of culture and atmosphere, it brings out the best in people, and it makes you really care about the team. It's a team sport. So,
yeah, I mean, we've watched that with these game winner shots that they've been making, and how everybody just kind of rushes the post game interview. And it's been so much fun to watch. And they've done it several times because it's happened several times. And yeah, you really get that sense of team. And I really like seeing that. I agree. I think a lot of it is the culture that's developed there, because I think this happened before Chauncey as well, especially with Dame. I think Dame is somebody who really stepped into that role and embraced that. And so I think a lot of it really does have to do with the culture of this team, which is something that, you know, I hope will continue and will carry on past this current team. There's a whole lot of players that we haven't really talked about. Is there anyone in particular that you want to highlight before we move on a little bit?
Justice Winslow, he's doing his thing. I mean, he's a solid player. You put him in and you know you're going to get someone who's capable of giving you, you know, playmaking, rebounding, hustle points, and scoring. So, I mean, he's just kind of versatile. And That's valuable on a roster. So he's someone you can just plug in, just plug and play. Put him in any rotation, and he's just gonna help the team.
We're gonna be the Justice Winslow fan club podcast. he's been great, and I don't hear him talked about enough, honestly. Like, he's one of those players that you don't hear as quite as much about. And I think he's somebody that's been really, really crucial for this team.
Yeah, I think honestly, you don't hear people talking much about the Blazers at all in terms of the bigger sports world. And it's crazy because, I mean, it's a team that's upsetting teams. I mean, like you see some of the teams that they're talking about are second to last place in the conference, or and you wonder why the Blazers winning when they were expected to be a lottery team is not more newsworthy.
Yeah, but I think as
so it goes.
I think if they keep it up, we'll hear more about it. You know, I think the more they do it and the more they show that this is really who they are as a team and it's not just a fluke, I think we'll see more of it.
Yeah, I can't wait for all the bandwagon fans to just come rolling in right towards the end of the season if we're playoff down. I knew it all along. They were my dark horse team to win it all.
I mean, listen, if you're looking for a team, the Trailblazers fandom is really a beautiful place to be. Our branding is, look at your jacket. We need to talk about your jacket, by the way. On a side note, I think you might have the coolest collection of Blazers gear of anyone I know. That is the coolest jacket.
Yeah, it's apparently the Blazers just make some really cool gear. And
you got to show the back of it.
Yeah, so I was wearing this today, and I was like, all right, I had it in my closet, and I was I always wear Blazers gear on the podcast because that's Blazers podcast. So I had the 22 on it and I was like, all right, this is very cool. I'm going to wear it. And then, you know, for the first time ever, I looked on the back and there's this giant picture of my father on it. And I was like, that's so cool.
It is really cool.
I don't know who made this jacket, but this is amazing.
So much Blazers gear, like from all the years.
Yeah, I mean, it tends to happen when my father, he just gets all, he has these boxes full of gear. And like, you know, for me, it used to be like, oh, like I'd just go to the gym and me and him would work out or something. And you reach into the box and you would just grab a random Blazer shirt and put it on and, you know, wipe your face with one. It's one of those things. There's just so much gear and so many memories and so many cool things to come.
Yeah, from, like I've never from seen the that Blazers. Jacket before. That's pretty cool. I wonder how much stuff you have that's like unique or one of a kind or like, you know, made for thing. Like somebody gave it to your dad that nobody else has that you don't even realize.
Yeah, I probably have a few like collector's items that people are just like searching. Like bidding on somewhere, but like they're probably sitting somewhere in a closet somewhere or in a box. Maybe I can, you know, some of these Blazers fans, maybe I can give them some of this gear.
Seriously, cool. That is a really cool jacket though. I like it. I think that's cool. Okay, so one more person before we move on to something slightly different, but one more person that we really need to talk about is Drew Eubanks. Drew Eubanks came in last year as just kind of a backup. A lot of people weren't super familiar with him. He came in as a backup center. I didn't know how long he would be with the team, and then he stayed, and then he came back this season, and now he is just like he's killing it, and he's really, really stepping up. Nurk, you know, we've talked about Nurk struggling here and there, and how when he's on, but when he struggles, we feel it. And so, in some of these down games where Nurk has struggled, I feel like Drew Eubanks has stepped in and really been huge. And I love that he's a hometown boy. You know, he's from Oregon. He went to Oregon State. This is where his family is. And I just think, like, what a cool story to have him now in this spot. But he's been fantastic. He's been so good.
Yeah, he's a solid player. I mean, so many solid players on this roster. And that's kind of why they've been winning games, is that everyone is capable of playing, you know, a good chunk of minutes and being a big contributor. So he's somebody who's just been solid. You look at some of the plays he makes, he's just very solid, taking up lanes on the floor, running, making the right reads, setting great screens. And he's 6'10". So, I mean, he's like, height is something you can't teach. And I love a tall Blazers roster where we're playing big. Because, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of small ball myself. So anytime we were playing our bigs.
That's the guy that's six, seven?
Well, me, I'm 6'6".
Okay. 6'6".
But I play the smallest position on the court. I play point guard, so I'm tall for
and
a
you're
point guard.
6'6". That's my point.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, height is just, so it changes the game because it forces people to respect it, and it's very hard to stop if you don't match it with equal height. And if you're the Trailblazers, your bigs on most nights are going to be better than the other team's bigs with Nurk and guys like Eubanks.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of that, the Blazers waived Olivier Sarr, who has not played a lot because he was injured. And they signed, I'm going to say his name wrong, I'm sure, Ibao Baji. I don't know if that's how I say it. I'm going to have to go look it up and hear how it's said. But he is coming from the G League, which I love. He has a 7'9" wingspan. So you want to talk about size. There's some size for you.
Yeah, that's going to be a big help. Obviously, you hate to see anybody waived. coming from a player experience, it's never fun.
No.
But, you know, whenever you add people like that to the roster who 7'9" wingspan, that's insane.
You look
at what that can do for your interior defense and what that can add in terms of shot blocking. And that's just a plus. And if he can contribute in that way, then that's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I'm not super familiar with him. I think, you know, we'll obviously get more familiar with him as the days go by. But I did see a lot of buzz about him when I went and looked him up a little bit. You know, a lot of people, he's been dominating in the G League and people have had good things to say. So he's hopefully a contributing factor, you know, as especially, you know, when Nurk is struggling. I hate that happens, but it does. And so we have to have, you know, people who can step up and fill that role when Nurk just isn't. And I'm hopeful that that won't last. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think with Nurk, it's like, This season is kind of it's an adjustment for him. So I think previously you had CJ and Dame were going to take the majority of the shots, and he was the third guy. And now it's not so clear. It's kind of gray area on any given night who's going to kind of be the one taking the majority of the shots. We see some, like a lot of nights, it's been Ant who's been taking, you know, 20 plus shots. And then there have been nights where Grant is on fire. Normally he's really efficient and he does get less shots, but there are some nights where he's had the hot hand and they keep feeding it to him. So Nurkic has not really had many chances to be the hot hand or to be the guy that's going to get, you know, 15, 20 shots up. So I think that's an adjustment for him. And having the offense run through him as opposed to, you know, all right, one possession, we're going to give it to Grant. Next possession, we're giving it to Josh Hart. Next possession, Simons. And, you know, not knowing when you're going to get your touches is always an adjustment period. So I think Nurkic, I'm not going to hit the panic button just yet.
Yeah,
because he's trying to figure out where he fits into all this and trying to figure out how he can be the best he can be in his role on the team. But I'm always a fan of, you know, feeding inside, playing inside out first. So I would like to see him get a few more touches see him get going early on, and that's going to help the team down the stretch, because then he's going to have the confidence to take over games like we all know he can.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that Nurk will stay in this spot, you know, and we've seen that. We've seen him kind of go in and out of it, which is promising. So, you know, we'll give him a little bit of time. Okay, so two more things. First of all, the carpet jerseys. The carpet jerseys. So I'm actually putting your tweet up here. You said, trying to explain to my non-Portland friends the importance of a carpet has made me look so crazy. I read that and I laughed right out loud.
It has been a struggle. You know, a lot of my friends are from Houston and they don't understand
right. That
the carpet is a very important centerpiece of Portland culture.
Right.
And, you know, see, even I had some friends comment, oh, why the carpet jerseys? What is that? I'm like, it's such a big deal. You don't even know.
It's
to me growing up. That was, you know, that's one of the main iconic sites of Portland. You have the carpet and it's just like, I think every city has like one thing that they're like really like is an identifier. And if you're a Portland local, you know. That you carpet know. Is our identifier, and everyone knows it. And there was a petition to get the carpet back when they changed it in the airport.
The carpet has its own Twitter account.
Yeah, so it's a really big deal, and I love the jerseys. I love that they, you know, had the wherewithal to put that and make it into a jersey. It might not make sense to other people.
Yeah.
But to Portlandians, it makes perfect sense. So just keep looking crazy.
I have really mixed feelings about these jerseys, to be honest. So when they were talking about doing a carpet jersey, I was like, oh, please don't do that. This is a terrible idea. In my head, I was picturing the whole jersey being carpet. Thinking, oh, that's maybe a lot. And then when the release leaked and I saw it, you know, little bitty on that page, I was like, I'm not sold. And then they released the full thing and I was still not totally sold. And then I saw them wear them on the court and I thought, oh, I kind of maybe like these. My problem is I live in Los Angeles. And so I wear my Portland jerseys and I like when people here know that they're Portland Trailblazers jerseys. I like that. If I wear that PDX carpet jersey here, nobody's going to know what that is. Unless they're actively watching the NBA, they're not going to recognize that that's the Trailblazers. So I like them. I don't know if I'll be buying one for myself, but I like them on the players. I think it's a cool thing for the carpet. I'm still a little outraged that we got a jersey with the carpet on it before we got a jersey with roses on it. I cannot believe that hasn't been done yet.
Well, one of these days.
One of these days.
I'm just glad that they're doing something unique that you know, caters to the city. Of course, I don't think any other city you wear that jersey and you're getting a, you know, people are tipping it. But
yeah,
I think in Portland, that's such a flex.
For sure.
And sure. I love to see it.
So this was my tweet about the carpet. I said, real big missed opportunity for an alternate court for the Blazers this year with that PDX carpet design. I mean, it's literally a floor.
That would be full circle.
I mean, honestly, like, we do so many alternative courts. Like, so many people do that. I would have loved – now, I don't think the whole court should have been carpet because that's a lot. Even the key, I would have done – the sidelines, the baseline, and the middle logo part, I would have done that the carpet and then left the rest.
And that I wouldn't do the middle logo. I'd do like the sideline.
The side?
The perimeter. But like,
did you see the Blazers alternative logo when they announced those that was like the PDX carpet logo? You could put that in the middle.
Yeah, but like, I don't know. I don't want to see that on the court. Per se, like on the sidelines is cool, but like once again, like Portland, it's already hard enough to get talked about in sports media in Portland. So like adding another kind of thing to kind of let people try to figure out is just I don't know if the rest of the world can handle it. Personally, I love the car design, but I don't think the rest of the world will understand it. And I've had my share of looking crazy trying to explain it to people. So
It's true. You really have to know, if it's one of those really, if you know, you know. And if you don't know, I can't help you. I'm sorry. So last thing from me, and then I'll check in with you and see if there's anything else you want to add. But an interesting thing that's going on right now, personally, I think, is Greg Brown III. So Greg Brown III is currently with the Clippers G League team. So Portland is one of the two teams in the NBA that doesn't have its own G League. Do you know what the other one is?
I used to know this. I used to have this in the back.
It's the Suns. It's the Suns and the Blazers. The Suns and the Blazers are the only two teams in the NBA that do not have their own affiliated G League team. So, which is really crazy, because there's even like the G League Ignite team that's not affiliated with the team. So I hope that in the future we have our own G League team. But in the meantime, Neil Olshey was not a fan of using the G League. He has talked about that in the past. So they didn't really do that. They had a couple two-way players that would go back and forth. You know, I think in the past it was with the Texas Legends, I want to say. But currently they have sent Greg Brown III down to the Clippers G League. Now, Greg Brown is still on the Trailblazers. He still has a contract with them. Nothing has changed as far as that. The reason that he's, and I explain this because I've seen a lot of confusion about this on Twitter. The reason that they send players down to the G League in this case is for development. He's not getting as much playing time as they would like for him to, as far as his development. So they send him to the G League so that he can get solid playing time. So this is not a bad thing. I saw a lot of people really disappointed. This is not a bad thing. The G League is a fantastic development resource. And I love that the team is using that. So now here's where this becomes a personal thing. I live in Los Angeles and I regularly photograph the Clippers G League team. In fact, I was just there tonight. And so it's been really cool because I have gotten to be photographing Greg Brown. So this photo, if you're not watching our YouTube, you're missing out on this. But this photo is Greg is pointing to the scoreboard. And this was right after the opposing team was doing a whole lot of trash talking. And Greg looked at the bench and said, "Look at the scoreboard," and pointed up to the scoreboard. So what I've learned about Greg Brown in the last few games of shooting the G League is, on top of all the things that Greg Brown does, he is also very much a trash talker. He's gotten in trouble about the last couple games. But here's, if you're watching on our YouTube, these are a couple photos. I took these photos. Greg Brown is still doing Greg Brown things. He is dunking like a crazy person. I probably shouldn't say that. He's dunking like crazy. and he's been really, really fun to watch. He's getting a lot of minutes, doing a lot of dunking and basketballing.
You love to see it. Like, a lot of people have this negative connotation when it comes to the G League, but I think it's quite the opposite. I mean, we've seen a lot of players will actually use the G League as a means to stay around the league, even veteran players. Like you had guys like Mario Chalmers, Gerald Green, and people like that who played in the G League.
Darren Collison was there last year. They played on the NBA roster.
Yeah, and they're... and Gerald Green played the big three against same league as me. And players will just gravitate towards, the game. And whenever you can play against guys like that, in the G League is at the top of their game. So having reps like that is just going to make you a better player. As good as it is to watch and be around, your veteran teammates who can kind of talk you through the game, being able to actually play is going to give you that actual experience and the confidence to go out there. And when you get your call back up to join the team again, you have the confidence to really contribute, because you don't feel like, all right, I haven't played in the last you know, 10 games or so. And so when you don't expect to go in, your mindset kind of changes and you kind of become stagnant in your growth and development as a player. But if you're getting reps and then you're kind of put back into the roster and maybe you get 5-10 minutes here and there, all of a sudden you're way more ready and you're way more used to the pace of the game. And it's not just like throwing you into a tub full of freezing water.
Yeah. Well, and I say this, I'll say this over and over and over. The G League is full of talent. And you said something about this earlier in the episode that, you know, a lot of the rosters and the talent of the people in the NBA is not different than, for instance, the guys in the G League. A lot of the guys in the G League, it just has to do with fit. You know, there's only so many roster spots in the NBA. And so you have these guys that are very talented professional players, and they just, they aren't fitting on a team or whatever. And so they're in the G League. I watch these games night after night after night after night because they shoot them, both the Clippers and the Lakers. And this is high level basketball. I mean, this is like, it's like watching an NBA game. And in fact, it's much faster paced than an NBA game. If you are living somewhere near a G League team, I highly, highly recommend you go out and support the G League team and watch basketball. It's fantastic basketball. And we saw this last year with the bubble, or not with the bubble, with COVID and losing so many players temporarily to COVID. And they were pulling guys up left and right from the G League to fill in, and they were playing and they were holding their own. And some of those guys stayed in the league and are still in the NBA. But it's some high percentage, like 46% of the current NBA played in the G League. So this is high quality basketball, and it's a great place for guys like Greg Brown to really be able to develop. He's getting a lot of time. And this particular team, the Ontario Clippers, I think are the second best team currently in the G League. So it's a quality basketball that's being played on that team. And I think he's going to really benefit from that. So,
yeah. And that's, I think at one point the Blazers were considering starting a G League franchise in Vancouver.
Okay.
Cause I remember them talking, there were inklings of that,
but yeah.
Yeah, anytime you get a chance to play at an NBA pace, which is so different than any other level of sport, you're going to gain valuable experience, and you're going to learn very quickly. So that's what it's for, and I love how the league is shifting more towards using their developmental league, because I think when I turned pro, it was the G League, it was the D League at the time, and
Right.
It was not a hot commodity. If you were in the D League, it was like being in purgatory.
Right.
And now that's definitely not the case. So I love to see it.
Yeah. Adam, is there anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
No, let's just keep our fingers crossed. Just can keep making these wins happen.
Yeah. For sure. I think it's going to be a good season. We're only 17 games in. There's a lot of season left. We finally have Adam on Twitter. I joke about this a lot, but we've got him there. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see our Twitter handles below. If you are listening, you can find him on Twitter at DrexGlides2, the number 2. And you can find me at Deandra Ann. Both of us are on Twitter and on Instagram. We always like to pull tweets, to use on the show. So if you tweet at us, you may end up here. We may end up discussing whatever it is you tweeted. But we both try to be active on there, and it's a great place to interact. So you can find us there. Make sure you're subscribed to our YouTube channel and our podcast feed so you don't miss out on the latest episodes and updates. We've got some cool stuff planned for the upcoming episodes. You're not going to want to miss what's going on, so make sure you're subscribed. We appreciate your support as we grow this, your likes, your comments, your ratings, your subscriptions, all that stuff. It's huge for us as we start this up. You know, we're kind of starting this from scratch. And so in order for it to grow, that really depends on people listening. And so if you share or like or comment, rate, subscribe, all that kind of stuff. That boosts us and it's huge for us. So we appreciate you guys doing that. Thank you so much for listening to Shooting Hoops podcast. We will be back next week.
If you feel like you have something to say or something interesting or something you want us to talk about, feel free to shoot a tweet at us and you know, let's get some engagement going. I mean, it's a podcast that we make, but we make it for you, the listeners. So yeah, interact with us.
Yeah. And I think we maybe have some opportunities to do some more interactive things in the future too. So yeah. All right. Thanks for listening.